Well, hello again, George Hallford, retired chamber. Used to be the chamber guy a long time ago. I'm having a good time now. I'm very pleased today on local matters. It's about the who, and it's also a little bit about the what. To have a good friend and a true leader in our region, great guy, former everything, mayor, state rep. We won't tell all the stuff, Dwight, but Dwight Henry's on today, and I already know, Dwight, we don't have enough time, but I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to try to listen. Welcome to the show.
George, thank you so much. You say former everything. All that means is I couldn't keep a job.
Me? That's what I said about chamber work. I'd moved a lot. Yeah, I couldn't hold a job.
Yeah. Keep a job. But it sure is good to be with you. I look forward to it. Well, thank you so much.
You've been a friend for 20, the whole time, and are a friend. So I was mentioning earlier what I love about this show. I like a lot of shows, but it's about the who. It's a conversation about Dwight Henry and who you are and your values and what's important and your faith, your family. And always it's like Billy Graham and about who am I, where did I come from, and where am I going. It follows that thread. But let's start with birth. And don't spend too much time in high school, but let's just carry me on through your journey as where you started.
Well, actually, I was born in Sweetwater, Tennessee.
Okay.
I tell everybody that when I was born, a little boy in Sweetwater, it had about 4,000 people.
Sure.
But if you go back there today, it's got about 4,000 people.
Yeah, good town.
Born there. You know, I've been a very blessed person my whole life. My mom and dad, you know, took me to church, kept me there. Sadly, my dad very quickly had a nervous breakdown when I was about 6 years old. I had two younger sisters.
Sure.
He spent most of the rest of his life in a psychiatric hospital. But my mom and grandmother kept me in church, raised me right, taught me how to work, and taught me that it was important to do that. We grew up in public housing. My mom had three little kids to raise and did the best she could. She took an iron and babysat and all like that. But I was really overweight, had a dad who was mentally ill, so I had a really bad self-image at first. But then I had some teachers that kind of took me under their wing, particularly one in high school, a lady named Pat Sutherland, God bless her. She saw some ability in me to stand up in front of people and talk.
Isn't that great?
And she just coached that out of me, took me to a level that I had no idea that I wanted to go or could go. And so that was kind of, I've used it in all my life, in ministry and politics and business. I had no idea, my grandfather, I had a grandfather on the other side very quickly. It was Luther Morton Henry is his name. Old man Luke is what they called him. And he taught me, he said, son, you vote. Do not miss voting. I mean, he had me to the point of, I thought there's like voting police. If you didn't vote, they came and picked you up and they'd come and get you. So I voted. And then very early in my life, George, and I heard this several times and maybe even said it sometime from time to time, I heard, Dwight, there's just two things you never talk about. And that's politics and religion.
That's right. And
my heart at that point in time as a very young man, I said, in my heart I heard, Dwight, those are the two things I want you to spend your life talking about, politics and religion.
Sure.
And for the last 40 years, that's where my life has gone. I've been a pastor to church involved in Christian radio. Went back to get a master's in ministry later in life so I could become a hospice chaplain, which is what I'm doing now.
Well, I want to spend some time with that a little later in the program.
And served as mayor here, served on the city council, served in as state representative for a while. And then way back in 1990, seemed like a long time ago, and it was, I was a Republican nominee for governor. So that's where my life
was
that,
your name from another community I was serving. Dwight Henry.
You served in Bradley County then, didn't you?
Yep, candidate for governor. Listen to you. How about so much rich information you just shared with us and the audience. The value of the value first, the spoken word in one person.
Yeah,
your granddad. Exactly. How one person can change your life.
Through
God. We'll talk about that in a while. And then secondly, just the story of family and story of community and the story that, you know, from whatever your background. Whatever our background, you know, when you've got family who loves and cares about you, it's biblical. you're wealthy.
It makes all the difference in the world. I had that support structure.
Yes.
And we were on welfare. We were on food stamps for a couple of years. But my mother taught me, son, this is a safety net. That all your life doesn't have to be that
way.
This
is
not a mattress.
That's what it's for.
So she, in fact, when we got old enough to start working, my sisters and I, basically the folks who ran the housing authority, and they were good people. They
understand.
Did a good job. But they said, well, you know, if you're Dwight starts working and those girls start working, you know, your rent's going to go up and this is going to go down, and might be better if they didn't work at all. And Mama said, no.
No, we don't put that. That's not what it's about.
So she said, we're going to move. So they moved out. She moved out and got a little house that she rented. In fact, we lived in the housing projects when I went off to college, but rented a little house. And she said, no, my children. And today, if I go back to the apartment complex, public housing group, I can knock on the door and I can find people my age who are still there.
Oh, sure.
And I don't reflect on them, but they didn't have anybody speaking into their lives. It's that teacher, Pat Sutherland, and an eighth grade teacher, Ms. Dillard Brown, and a mother and a grandmother and people who spoke into my life, took me to church, taught me to work, and that's really made all the difference.
And Dwight, we make a difference through our faith, through our the Holy Spirit. We'll talk about that in a little while too.
Okay.
But we don't know every day who we're impacting.
The
one word can change the world
or
change a person. So, okay, man, I've already learned some stuff about you I didn't know. Say there.
And there's a lot you don't know. I'm not going to tell you.
I know we can't. let's talk. I remember you telling me one time your story about. You were in Athens, Tennessee, too, weren't you?
Moved from Sweetwater to Athens, which
is... Let's pick up there and talk about Tennessee. I'm already giving down the story away, but talk about your experience and...
Moved to Athens to... my mother moved from Sweetwater to Athens about the time I was in high school, so I went to McMinn County High School in Athens. No one in my family had gone to college before.
Yeah,
And I decided to go. I went to a community college, Cleveland State Community College for a couple of years, and then transferred to Tech.
That's how I got here
as a Tech student. My plan was to graduate and go home. I finally did graduate, but I never did go home.
Well, this is your home.
This is my home. Yeah, has been for a long time.
Tell a story. You told me one time the story about going up there on the bus. You were on the bus.
Oh,
made the bus trip.
Little did I know it was going to change my life. We were coming, my first trip to Cookeville. I'll be as concise as possible. The speech teacher, Ms. Pat Southern, I referred to, she said, Dwight, I'm going to put you on the debate team. Do you have $40? Ooh. And I said, well, for once in my life, I did have $40. I've been working all summer. So I want you to go to Cookeville, Tennessee, and you're going to go to a debate clinic. You're going to be up there all week, and you and your debate partner, who I've already picked up for you, and you're going to learn to debate.
Wow.
Well, I missed my ride. We were supposed to meet one place. I thought it was another. So she got up here to Cookeville along my debate partner and said, where are you? I said, I missed you. She said, well, catch a bus. Well, and so I went down to the Trailways bus station in Athens, got on the bus, drove all the way up to Knoxville. It stopped four or five times on the way. Those buses do. I got up there. It was dark, and I said, I'm going to Cookeville. He said, well, the good news is we've got a bus here that goes to Cookeville. The bad news is the next one doesn't run until 8 o'clock the next morning. So I spent the night at the bus station.
You're camping out at the bus station.
Yeah, and so I'm at the bus station, and finally, next morning again, I'd been up all night. I mean, just literally not sleeping at all.
Oh, sure.
Rode from Knoxville to Cookeville on the bus. I'd never been 100 miles away from home by myself in my life. And then I got off in Cookeville. I might as well have been in Los Angeles. I thought, man, where am I? And so I'm looking around thinking, well, and I did see a taxi. So I knew a taxi would probably know where Tennessee Tech is. So I got in the taxi, said, can you take me to Tennessee Tech? And he looked at me and said, which building?
Oh,
and
gosh.
You know what my response was? Is there more than one? I promise that's exactly what I said to him. I said, is there more than one? And he said, well, yeah. And so he lets me out in front of the Derryberry Hall, which is the administration building. And he said, I think if you go in there and ask them, they can probably point you in the right direction. So I've got my little luggage in my hand. I'm a skinny little high school, you know, rising senior. And I'm thinking, man, what? We don't have buildings like that in Sweetwater. Big golden eagle on the top of it.
It's a big city. It's a big university.
I'm walking up those steps and finally find my way there. End up, that trip changed my life. I really ended up participating in the debate clinic. Had never done really well before. I'd been to some tournaments for public speaking, that sort of thing, but finished bottom or close to the bottom. But we learned how to debate, myself and my partner.
Right, that's great.
And debated four rounds, and we won four rounds.
Wow.
It was like, so I said, I can do this.
You can do it.
But you know who my coach was?
No.
He said, you're going to be. He said, we're going to give you a coach. And your coach was a member of last year's state championship team at the college level. I said, that's the kind of coach I need. And he said, his name is Bob Luna.
No.
Bob Luna.
Bob
was my coach.
Luna, yeah.
He was my coach, and he was my partner's coach, and he coached us to an undefeated record. We won first place in our division, and I began to get some confidence that I hadn't had before. I can do this. And so I began to develop the skill of just standing in front of people
public
and talking.
Public speaking, debate.
And it's carried me through my whole life. If it's business, if it's ministry, if it's
everything.
Politics.
We do it every day.
Yeah.
Negotiate.
So that's kind of how I got here. That was my very first trip to Cookeville, Tennessee. And I'll never forget getting on that taxi, and he said, which building? And I said, is there more than one? So that's how it all started. But, you know, George, a little bit later, you know, I reflect on that. I walked up those steps at Derbury, just a scared little kid. And then it wasn't too many years later that I was walking up those same steps as mayor of the town.
Yes.
I was walking up those same steps as state representative. I was walking up those steps as president of the Tennessee Tech International Alumni Association, president of the student body. So God's been good to me.
Yes,
really
but you said it. Some teacher spoke words and gave you confidence to take that step.
Absolutely.
I've got a similar story, but this is not about me. This is about you. We're about to finish the first segment, but so far you've already – what an interesting first part of your life, Dwight. Yeah. And it's still going on, buddy. We're still in there doing it. You are.
Any room I'm in, I believe I'm the most blessed man in the room. God's been good to me.
Oh, God, that's a common thread through this. But we're going to take a break here in a few seconds and come back and pick up and find out more about – my good friend, Dwight Henry, George Hallford, Local Matters, back in just shortly. George Hallford back with Local Matters with Dwight Henry, who led a very interesting life his first 20-some-odd years. We're going to pick up there, Dwight. And let's go forward. You graduated from Tech, and let's just talk about your life and what you did and who you were and are.
Well, I got to Cookeville, and I stayed here after I graduated, and I knew George. It was the very first time I voted. I was talking about earlier about that in my heart. I heard those are the two things, politics and religion. I want you to spend your life talking about. The very first time I walked in a voting booth, I was living in Athens then, but I walked in that voting booth. I can see it like it was yesterday. I'm in that voting booth, and I knew that somewhere, sometime, I would walk into a voting booth, and I'd be voting for myself for something.
Isn't that great?
I knew that.
You had that. That was the Holy Spirit. That was inside.
I just knew that. But it was, I guess, part of my grandpa putting voting into me.
Isn't that great?
Participate. You know, government's going to make a difference in your life. You need to make a difference by voting. So I got up here, and it's back in the 80s. And it was there's so much to the story. I'm recalling everything, but to be concise, I started just thinking about running for city council, and it got
in
my heart.
You were how, 20s?
I was 31, 31, 32.
But you were young guy. Yeah.
That's what. I get that on my mind, and I said, God, I said, this is a big deal. I need you to. I said, I know we go by faith, not by signs or fleeces, but I need to put out a fleece here, and I won't go into the detail about the fleece, but it happened. I thought, I'm supposed to run. Well, little did I know that 13 other people decided they were supposed to run, too.
You had 14 people running.
I had 14 people running.
Five
Of course,
slots.
And you know in the city of Cookeville, they elect five.
And then
you can vote for up to five people. And so there was 14 of us. I thought, this is a good, bad time for the Lord to be speaking to me about running. Because all of them were older than me. All of them had lived in town longer than me. But I did have one thing that I developed. When I ran for student body president at Tech, I was on Tech for like two quarters because, as I told you, I transferred up here as a junior, and I'd served as student body president at Cleveland State.
Man.
And because of the skill of speaking, it just
got in your blood. It was in your blood.
Yeah, and so I said, you need to run for student body president up here. And I thought, nobody knows me up here. I've only been here two quarters.
Wow.
And the guy who's going to run also, he'd been up here all 3 years, and I said, So someone said to me, you need to go to Nashville and get you several boxes of those little O. Henry candy bars.
No.
O. Henry candy bars.
That was your stick.
And then I said, just go everywhere you go and stand in front of your classes, go to fraternity houses, just hand them out.
Top of mind? No.
So I started doing it. I said, yeah, that worked. And I would say this to, and I did all, I mean, hundreds of them. I gave it hundreds of them. And I'd go to people and say, you might not vote for me, but you will remember my name.
That's right.
And they did. And this guy who'd been on campus for 3 years, I'd been on campus for two, and a nice guy, we became really good friends after that. I beat him like 2-1, like, 1,800 to 900. And it's only because I wasn't really more qualified. I just had the candy bar.
Well, you had a name. You found a way that modern day, that's where all this millions of dollars of it, trying to find a hook or get a name. Yeah.
So what I did was when I decided to run for city council, I thought it worked at Tennessee Tech. It'll probably work here. So, hundreds and little nuggets, let's say, O. Henry.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd just keep bags of them with me all the time. And I'd show up at, school.
That became
I had some daughter at Capshaw School at the time. And I'm sitting there waiting on her. I thought, man, all these people waiting on their kids. I'm going to get here early tomorrow. And while they're sitting there waiting, hey, I'm going to run city council, Ooh, O. Henry bars. And
that's
to this day, I have kids
you
now.
You still do it?
They know I still don't still do it, but I have people that are like in their 30s
they
now.
Remember now.
I remember when you came to my mama's door and you knocked on the door and you gave me this candy bar. And I said, yeah. So they still talk about that. And that's and I did that when I ran for state rep. I did run for city council. I did that when I ran for governor. I probably should have stock in that company. I was the number one customer probably.
You ever told the company that story?
They don't make the O. Henry in the United States anymore.
I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
they do. But that sort of – and back to the city council race, it was like there were 14 of us. And what they do, some of your listeners already know, and I know you know, is that you can vote for up to five people. And
yeah.
I don't have to vote for five, but you can vote for up to five. And in Cooper, we serve at large on the city council. We don't represent one particular district. We serve the whole city. And what they do, and it's not written that way in the bylaws of the city, but typically what happens.
The custom.
Custom is typically what happens is whoever gets the most votes is made mayor.
And that's where
we still do that today. We still do that today. So I'm out there just beating and banging on doors, giving away 100 candy bars as fast as I can. And I'm thinking, I'm just wanting in the top five, man. Give me top five out of 14. Well, somebody said to me like 2 days before the election, and this has never even crossed my mind. They said, I think you're going to be the mayor. I said, I hadn't even thought about that.
Wow.
So the election happened. I ended up with the most votes, and there I am. I'd been to one city council meeting my whole life, and I'm 32 years old, wet behind the ears, the mayor of the town. If that folks had known that, they'd really been scared at that point in time. We can talk about some things that happened during that administration, but that's what happened. I went served for mayor for 3 years, and we had a good time and got some things done.
Did you pass them out on your way to the running for governor?
I did, all over Tennessee.
Let's talk about that.
Memphis to Mountain City, they had O. Henry candy bars.
Let's go with that. You were the Republican nominee.
Right.
How'd you get the nomination, and then what happened in the – what year was that?
That was 1990. That was 1990.
Ned Ray McQuirk?
He was governor, very popular governor.
Great guy.
And very likable, very folks again.
Both sides of the aisle like.
Oh, yeah, and – but I knew, because I'd been on Capitol Hill for a couple of years, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was going to propose a state income tax, which I was adamantly opposed to.
Sure, I remember those days.
And somebody needed to – it was a fight worth fighting. It was David versus Goliath, but it was a fight worth fighting. So I decided when none of the top layer candidates decided to run, I thought somebody's got to say something about this. So I ran in a Republican primary, won the primary, won 90 of the 95 counties in the primary.
Good. And gracious,
and just but didn't have that kind of success in the general election, but still, and Ned McMurdo, by the way, he had said this earlier first term. He said, "Well, I got a lot of experience. He'd been Speaker of the House, for a lot of years."
Oh, yeah, great speaker.
And he was, he said, "Well, really, I've got a lot of experience." He said, "All I need is two vanilla wafers and a cup of coffee, and I'll be ready to go to work every day."
I remember him
saying. It became the vanilla wafers versus the O. Henry candy bar. That's what the campaign became, but it was really about the income tax.
Time flies when you're having fun. You have had a rich political.
It's been a great
career.
Life.
Early in that. And we're almost out of time for the second series, but I want us to spend a little more time on that, and then we'll come back. We'll move forward again and talk about you then and now. But what did you learn from that race for governor? So I know you learned a lot every time you ran, but anything new you learned?
I knew it got more cutthroat at that level.
Oh, sure.
It got more cutthroat, and it was really intense. And that's what I learned. I learned probably that I didn't want to run for governor again.
and how diverse. Three different states within a state. Three regions. You traveled
It's a long way from
Mountain City to Memphis.
It's a long way. In fact, somebody said you could start, one person could start in Mountain City going to Canada, and we can start Mountain City going to Memphis, so they'd get to Canada first. And
It's
that long. Yeah, it was a great experience, but it was a tough experience in a way.
Wow. What a great story. I'm sitting with a candidate for governor. That's impressive.
It was fun.
That's called high cotton where I come from. But when we come back, we're gonna go and carry on. George Hofford, Dwight Henry, Local Matters. Be right back. We're back. George Hofford, Dwight Henry, and this is gonna be the fun part. Oh, it's fun. Yep. It's all fun. But we're gonna keep talking about all these things and pick up where you left off in our last segment. But then we're going to look in the crystal ball and talk about the future and where you – and you're doing a lot of – and you've always been involved in doing the Lord's work, but you're doing some of the most meaningful things that I want to know more about in just a moment. But let's pick up where you left off. You didn't make the governorship. You bought a lot of candy bars, and you came back to Cookeville. I mean, you were in Cookeville, so let's pick up there.
Well, after 1990, I knew I really wasn't finished politically. I didn't think I was, nor was I finished in ministry. So I ran. I served two more terms on the city council. After the governor's race, I served it. And by then, there were four-year terms, so I served two four-year terms. I served not only a number of years, not only a number of decades, but not only a number of centuries, but I served in two different millenniums. I just kept coming and going.
I hope you've read
it. It's like the second
down,
coming
Dwight.
Of Dwight Henry, the third coming of Dwight Henry.
I believe you got a book if you just write it. You got it up here. Go ahead.
I served from like 1985 to 2000. I forget the last one, 2014 or something. So I just kept coming and going, you know. But at any rate, after I was in business for myself in three different businesses. One of them happened to be a radio station, which had a Christian format. So
And
we actually ended up selling all three of those businesses at various times. So did that. But back in the late 90s, my mother contracted cancer.
Okay.
And she was living. I wanted her to live with me, so she lived with me the last 2 years of her life. And we had a hospice team come over to help us with that. And I loved her. My sisters loved her. We were with her all the time, but we just didn't know how much medicine, how soon, how often. So they came over, and they were such a blessing to us.
Wow!
They were just and helped us through that so much. I thought, wow, that's what I want to do. So I got in my heart to become a hospice chaplain. And so I asked a fellow, Steve Mathias, who was Lazarus House Hospice. You may remember Steve.
I do.
He was a non-for-profit, so I made a little financial contribution to them. And he asked me if I'd serve on the board. And I said, sure. So I served 3 or 4 years on the board. And as a volunteer, we'd go to hospice patients and sing Christmas carols and encourage them and that sort of thing. So I said, Steve, what does it take to be a chaplain? And he said, well, you've got some of the background. I'd pastored a church in Buffalo Valley and done those kind of things. He said, but Medicare wants to see their hospice chaplains to have masters in ministry or counseling or something like that. Well, I'm already over 50 years old. And the surprise, surprised myself by getting a bachelor's degree in history and political science. So I thought, master's?
I think that's great.
Well, I sat on that for about a year, and I thought, I'll just stay on the board. But I knew in my heart I was supposed to do it. I just knew that. So what I did after about a year, I moved to Knoxville. And got the degree in master's in ministry and came back and went to work in hospice. And that's what I'm doing today, still today, as a hospice chaplain.
Let's talk about hospice.
Okay.
how special and the need. We live all over the country and all over the world. The nuclear family is not what we used to be. Like you and I grew up in different situations, pretty similar. And we were working folks, but class folks, but talk about hospice and what you've seen, what you've learned, the need or whatever, just wherever you want to go with that.
Well, to be a hospice chaplain or to be a hospice patient, I should say, a doctor has to sign a piece of paper, a document that says, you know, based on if your disease or ailment carries out its preternatural time frame, I can say that you've got six months or less to live.
I didn't know that. It's
called, that takes that, a doctor to sign that to say you have to, can be hospice appropriate. So every time we walk behind a door, if it's in a person's home, if it's an assisted living, if it's a nursing home, somebody behind that door has been told that. Some family is dealing with that.
Yes.
And I have people tell me almost every week, boy, that's got to be a hard job. I believe that God gives you the grace to do what he's called you to do.
It's a mission field.
And whatever it's called, if it's radio, if it's chamber work, I mean, he gives you the grace.
I believe that.
And grace, by that, the definition that I use of grace is God's ability working in you to help you do things you can't do on your own.
That's right.
And I say, I don't ever want to seem calloused or I don't ever want to seem non-caring, but no, it's a challenge. It's not hard. It's an honor. I've never, in all the years I've been a hospice chaplain in Georgia, and you know me, I've never one day felt like I was going to work. Because you
that
walk
sounds
in,
so similar to it, me.
It's a calling. Yeah, it's an honor it's an honor to be invited in. I've done, as we sit here and record this, I've done three funerals in the last 5 days. A lot of times you get close to those families.
For sure.
And they want you to say, would you come and conduct the funeral service? And I'm honored to do that too. So you're involved with the family
at different levels.
Yeah, you're involved with the family when they're going through maybe one of the most difficult.
Worst times of their
life. I just, before I came to the studio, I'm thinking about it. I'm tearing up a little bit. A lady called, and her husband just had a seizure, and he's pretty, very close to passing, and he happens to be a friend of mine. And she said, would you sit here and help me write his obituary?
Oh, man.
Wow. What an honor that is to be invited into a family that's going through that. And so that's and it's been, honestly, my life's worked out like that. Politics and religion my whole life. In fact, I said to a fellow the other day who's training to be a hospice chaplain, well, he is one. He just moved here to the area, and I was riding with him, and we were doing some things. I said, can you believe they pay us to do this?
Oh, yeah.
Just that way we get – I mean, it's just because to go in, to encourage, to pray with them, to lift them up, to be with that family when they're going through a hard time, that's an honor, George. It's really an honor.
You know, you and I, we're not going to talk – we might talk about Barry Manilow.
Yeah.
Jackie DeShannon had a song we were growing up in the 50s or 60s about what the world needs now is love.
Love, sweet love.
And isn't that true?
Oh,
it's all about love. It's all about people. And I've known that, but I'm really relearning that we make a difference in people's lives every day. And some of us don't even realize it.
Maybe. And in 3 years as mayor, 11 years on city council, a term in the legislature, running for governor, watching and being involved in political, maybe the most important thing I learned. I was on the city council. When you're in city council, you're elbow to elbow with the other council members.
No question.
It's not Facebook. It's not where you can just put anything you want to nobody. You're right there literally with them. And when you go, when you're having a difference of opinion or a heated debate, you know, it's not like they're somewhere else. They're right there touching your elbows. And so I remember my term on city council, it was one of those issues that people felt strongly about their opinions, and five were back and forth, and it came down to a 3-2 vote on the council. Unfortunately, I was on the two side, but 3-2 vote. But what I learned to do was that after the meeting was over, the gavel had banged, meeting over, I turned to the guy right beside me who was on the other side of the issue and stuck out my hand and said, it's just business. It's not about me. It's not about you personally.
That's just
business. Maybe we'll agree on the next issue. Maybe we won't. But this isn't personal. And I think we could learn a lot about that in the political world.
We have not lost it totally. But that's a big thing we've lost in this country.
Yeah.
And debate. Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd fight like the devil and they go out and have a drink afterwards.
After 5 o'clock in the afternoon,
beer,
it's over. Yeah.
So just.
Did you see that movie, Reagan?
I
don't want to get off into that, but
that's
good.
Tell the Barry Manilow story.
I did a radio show for a while, and I was as head of the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, I came in for an interview years ago.
We did it three or four times.
We did it with the first one.
And so during the, you know, they have what's it called? Segway music, but
yeah, you always had bumper music,
something like that. And so we're sitting there, waiting to come back, and here comes some Barry Manilow on the, as that bumper music, and I'm thinking, yeah, boy, I always like Barry Manilow. I said, George, you like Barry Manilow? Yeah. So we end up, after they flip the mics on, we're still talking about Barry Manilow for the next 10 minutes and all of his songs and concerts and his, and every time you came back,
that's I said, every time you came back,
I said, heard Barry Manilow lately? That was our topic of discussion. Mainly.
Well, but it was fun. A lot of males, Barry Manilow is not necessarily their favorite guy. Back then, and people used to kid me, "Are you the Barry Manilow guy?" I said, "Yeah, we was having fun."
Yeah.
We had more fun on your show.
It was a lot of fun.
You did that for years, too.
Long time. Yeah. I got in radio actually when I was right out of high school, weekends on local stations there in Athens, Inglewood, Etowah, AM radio. And I was sitting there thinking, I cannot believe that they're paying me to sit here and play this.
Yeah.
You had to cue it up on the vinyl, all that stuff, And I thought, man, I'm sitting here playing this music I really like. It was top 40 pop music back in those days. And I think, and they're paying me to listen to music. What a blessed man I've been. Then I got a job as a sports writer for my local paper.
Got paid to go to watch football.
I've never really had.
How do you get one of them there jobs?
Like I said, when I went to work for a hospice company, I told the lady, I said, and then I was in business myself all those years. She was asking me, I said, the only thing I'm concerned about a little bit is I've never really had a real job. I don't know if I'd be very good at it.
Okay. This isn't about me. I have tried to be quiet. But when you said that, it finally dawned on me after years and doing something I loved. I was a secular minister. My job was to go and work with the community and try to do good in a secular way. And I'm just so blessed to have served and played a role, minor role, but a team role.
Yeah.
In our community, and I know you. God's not through with you yet, buddy. Anything else you want to? We got about a minute left.
Of course, I'm still on a PRN or as needed basis, still doing hospice work. Very, very active. I've tried to stay active in my community. I'm a member of the Rotary Club, Breakfast Rotary, and we're about service. That's what we do. As you know, you're Rotarian, and we're about performing service projects. And also, of late, I've started pastoring a church. In Spring City, which is about an hour from here.
I come over there one day.
It's the same old Dwight Henry, politics and religion and family.
Here I am, Lord, send me in the Old Testament. Just what can I,
He sent me to Spring City.
It's a good place
to be. It's been a great life. It's a good life. I've been blessed. I really have.
We have a great relationship, and you're a good friend, and man, we're counting down. We may need to have a repeat of this.
Let's get some Barry Manilow. We can go for another hour and a half.
Start with Barry Manilow and we'll start a Barry Manilow
fan club.
But I'm just so glad that you to know you and work with you and see you at the Friday morning men's
gathering
that Kevin Bowling does. That's a joy.
But
we're well, we're running out of time, Dwight. God bless you and keep up the good work, and thank you so much.
Thank you for all you mean to this community, George. Thank you.
We're through, folks. Next time.